You people should stop buying shitcoins, because shitcoins are a financial risk for society. Only buy Bitcoin before you get financially wrecked. Consult with a professional before investing. Older Citadel 21 Zines are now again available on Citadel21.com. Don't forget to order a Zine before they run out, because only 1,000 copies will ever be printed of any of the Citadel 21 Zines, ever. Volume 5 is already available on Citadel21.com. Get them while they still last, and in stock. That's Citadel21.com, the Bitcoin cultural zine. Hey everyone, there is a brand new episode coming up right now. I sat down with Laser Huddle to talk about the Sovereign Club, which was previously named as the Freedom Maximalists. Previously, the Sovereign Club was called as Freedom Maximalists, but it got renamed. After the music, the podcast begins. Enjoy. Now we're live. Welcome to Bitcoin Rehab Show. Welcome to the show. So how's it going, man?
Caro, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Finally got you on the Bitcoin Rehab Show. I think it's probably your first time being on a podcast. So how about you tell our dear listeners who you are and how you got into Bitcoin?
Yeah, you're right. This is the first podcast that I've done. My name's Laser Hodl on Twitter and the various social webs. And I think, you know, I've listened to a lot of podcasts and listened to a lot of people's stories about Bitcoin. And I think mine is a little different. And so hopefully this conversation adds something to the sort of chorus of Bitcoiners that are entering the space.
Lots of newbies are arriving these days. Every day I go on Twitter and new people are just following me. I don't even know who they are. I go on a Clubhouse and I see people who I don't even know who they are, but they have like thousands of Clubhouse followers. I'm like, who are these no-name people coming here? It's like the space just starting to dilute nowadays.
It's funny with Clubhouse. Clubhouse seems to be the new place to capture people at the top of the funnel. I think it started out as Reddit and it kind of moved to Twitter. And since there was a great purge on Twitter and everyone got scattered out, Clubhouse seems to be capturing a large portion of that.
Pretty much. And
so I'm relatively new to Bitcoin. I came in at 2018 and started acquiring corn and learning about money, learning about the space. I made all the same mistakes that you would expect someone to make, shitcoining and the like, and sort of paid the iron price until I came to maximalism. And the purity of that and the logic of that is undeniable once the light bulb comes on. But of course, education's expensive, and I was no exception in that case. I think where my story is really different is, I've already worked a career, had a career in software engineering, and am newly retired. So I've sort of am a large beneficiary of the Cantillon effect, have had to sort of compete on that treadmill and outrun my peers, outrun people in society, and have had reasonable success doing so. But playing the game, I learned well, it's a very bad game. It's a bad game for individuals, and it's a bad game for society. And so I think that that's a little bit different than what I've heard in the Bitcoin space. I think a lot of people make their have sort of, they're able to get out of the rat race via Bitcoin. But in my case, I've actually already left the rat race, and I've entered into Bitcoin. Would you say that's different than what you've seen out there, Carl?
Well, depending on how you get started, but everybody gets, you know, they get wrecked on shit coins and they repent. But you know, people how they start before that, from what they where they are from life, is very different. There's like wide variety. It's totally random. I can't be a judge of that. What is the correct way how to start, or what life people had before that? Like I'm just a nobody here who got into Bitcoin, and now I'm totally, you know, free. I broke the shackles of what society put onto me, what the state had on me, and I'm a totally free man. And
you know, repent. You use the word repent. I think that is the right word.
Yeah,
because it implies that there's morality and ethics involved in leaving shitcoinery in a certain way. Yeah. In a certain way, shitcoinery is actually, I feel like it's a cousin to the fiat system. It's you know, you're not really leaving that system of sort of stealing each other's time, because that's what it is. It's people, you know, you have Bitcoin, which is honest money, and it's this idea that you can store your time and effort in something that will not deteriorate. And people, even having that, they are pulled towards shitcoins, because it's that fiat mindset of, well, you know, I might be able to, you know, I use the term a lot, fuck off to the Bahamas. And so people, there's that gravitational pull to like, well, I might be able to fuck off to the Bahamas much quicker if I just shitcoin. And it's this aversion to honesty, right? Because if you learn a skill and if you produce value for the world, you can save that effort and time in Bitcoin. And when you've produced enough value for the world, you can take a breather, your options increase, what you do with your life, your autonomy increases. And that is absolute honesty. And it means that you can live your life in a way that is good for yourself, first and foremost, and therefore good for society. But, you know, altcoins and even speculating in stocks, what we see lately is really the antithesis of that, right? Because it's back to that, okay, we're on the treadmill, right? The dial's being turned up, it's going faster, and well, I see a way to, you know, beat these other people, and I can get to the end place faster. But with Bitcoin, it's not about the end place, right? It returns the focus to the journey. And of course, the journey has always been learn something that suits you, produce value for the world, and build a life upon it. And so Bitcoin is a return to that. I shitcoined because I felt for that greed, that sense of, oh, you know what? I see a shortcut here. And rightfully so, I paid a good price on it, and was humbled, because even though I had already had the light bulb come on with Bitcoin, I was able to see myself fall for that anyways, right? And I think that's why they say education's expensive. You have to really eat some cost to your pride and pocketbook to learn that, wait a second, the honest way really is the right way. And that's why Bitcoin's so wonderful. It vanquishes the whole dishonest approach to getting ahead in life.
Exactly. There is some comparison fiat, but in a sense that it's more in the sense of people trying to have a better life. It's in everybody's right, you know, to seek a better life, that they try to find a way for them to become more wealthy, to have financial security, and for their family. But
yeah,
the shit coins basically are just like casinos where people try to achieve a very, very sudden enrichment for their goals. And this is where they fail.
I come from the technology space, and I'm going to get into my story a bit here soon, but I think we're starting with the epiphany that I had that brought me into Bitcoin, and then I will talk you through why that's important for me. I think you're right on the lure of shitcoins. Is it's it's that rat race mentality. And I don't think that you get away from that fully until you embrace
it. It is. And the problem with this is that there are lots of people who claim that that you shouldn't put all your money into one egg or one basket. And there is a problem that the people think that this Bitcoin is just an investment. Bitcoin itself is not an investment. It is a tool to break free from the shackles of that world that you're stuck in, that you have no progress forward, that you have no plans forward, that you have no life forward, that you can achieve a betterment towards your goals to become someone. Someone that you can be proud of yourself, that you can feel secure and safe in the world. Even though you're more free, it comes with the responsibility. And people who are shitcoining, they all striving for that, but they fail at it because they don't realize it, that they are not saving money and they are not creating prosperity for themselves. They are just wasting their opportunity for a long-lasting wealth. Because if you make it, you're gonna become a person who doesn't value his money, who unable to control it in a way that somebody who kept collecting that amount of Bitcoin over years or over generations, and you're gonna start spending it, and the things you're gonna be doing is gonna be much more different and much more worse in quality.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like those BitMEX guys on Twitter who got really rich 100xing whatever else, and they got really rich off of it. They went to bang hookers, and one of them even overdosed. And that's it. That's the life they're going to be getting. If he would have been a bit more of a guy who cared about himself, he probably wouldn't have overdosed and wouldn't have been a body bag. But otherwise, he would be doing something more sustainable for himself and society. That he built something, a lasting generation, lasting legacy, what I would say. But in this sense that you're just shitcoining, you're just trying to make more money, and sorry to cut you there, but this is just terrible that people cannot value savings anymore. They think that they need to buy all these things in order to have an investment. No, this is not an investment. This is real money that you save your created wealth into. That you go to work, you receive paper money that worth nothing. People just tell you it worth something. And while your produced wealth is in that paper money, you can put in a Bitcoin to actually preserve it. And that's what people don't understand. They just want to seek gains that Bitcoin at one time back in time somehow generated. But yeah, I think that's what it is.
You know, there's something to the, you know, you mentioned on lasting wealth. And I think it's more than that. It's lasting contentment. Because what Bitcoin teaches someone is to understand the steady hand you must have to actually lift your time horizon and look further out. And that means having very precise and thoughtful consumption and building a skill that will take you through to the future and allow you to save. And, you know, Keynesians, there's a lot of speak of the pace of money, the velocity of money. And I think that's a great term for it, because at the edges of Keynesian economics is, well, not only do you have people that, you know, their wealth is deteriorating at such a rate, they have zero opportunity to ever acquire security or happiness, right, or contentment. But at the other side, you have successes that are so rapid, that are so, you know, people slingshot them into this place where they're done, and then it's impossible to fall from that place. That, you know, well, they're ethically in a really hard spot, and you see that in the examples of overdoses, and you see that in examples of newly successful people basically having very tragic stories, because that system teaches people this pace of success, and this pace that it's really does not allow for contentment. And then you know, just to contrast that with Bitcoin, of course, you're holding something that lasts, and it teaches you to build a life that would last, right? because it's really not about just going to Vegas and, you know, okay, you had it yesterday and now it's time to enjoy it. It's not about that. And so, you know, the reason I harp on this and the reason I hit this this part of it is, for me, I kind of waded through this system in my career with complete distaste, seeing how broken it was, and yet feeling this trapped feeling of, well, this is the only way. What I have to do is run faster than everyone else, even as they're dialing up the speed on this treadmill. And I have to do the tricks that have been developed and play the games that have been crafted. And if I do it better, then I can go fuck off to the Bahamas, right? And, you know, I was well on my way with that and have basically completed that you know, stereotypical career when I came into Bitcoin. And it ended up being the antidote to all the things that I had learned to hate with the, you know, the deepest part of my being.
How do you gut yourself through the moral question there that you were actually part of the system that damaged everything?
Yeah, so, you know, my story is like this. So I went to school in a really nice area in rural America, and I was a rebellious little shit. I was too smart for my own good, and I was far too cocky for my own good. And so, you know, I think Jordan Peterson is a big fan of mine, and he says, you know, one of the obligations of an adult is to socialize their children such that other adults want to help them forward in life. And I was of the type where, you know, I knew I was much smarter than the adults around me. And so I didn't have a lot of humility because of that. And so I didn't try very hard in high school or pay much attention, but I did graduate a year early, and I went on to college a year early. And I dropped out of college in my first year and started a tech startup with my best friend at the time. And we moved to California and did the startup thing. And I spent 15 years founding several companies, working for very, very large big tech, you know, well-known big tech companies, and also working for tiny startups that, you know, that failed. And so I've seen a lot in 15 years, but I'm still very young. And the thing is that, you know, I killed myself. I completely postponed my life 15 years and didn't participate in the young adult life that most people get, with the idea that I was going to finish the rat race and I would have freedom when I saw everyone else sacrificing their life. And while doing that, while going through that journey, you know, I kept noticing that it was getting pushed out. The time when I was going to be free, that I was projecting that I would release myself, kept getting pushed out. And it was getting pushed out by two things. My tastes were, as I had worked hard and played hard as a rationale for, you know, the only thing that would keep me going through 15 years, my life became more expensive, but also inflation, right? I kept noticing that, oh, there's some very clever forces that are keeping me on this treadmill. And I also noticed that the speed of the treadmill was going up. And that, you know, I came to despise that fact. And so, you know, I was very progressive. I was a little rebel when I was a kid. And, you know, I came up with all these reasons why I thought conservatives were wrong. You know, the right was wrong, why religion was silly. You know, so I had built up this reality where I was very smug and convinced of myself in all the life choices I made. But there I was. I was completely progressive, liberal. I was on the treadmill running as fast as I could. I was and I was also, my ego was inflated because I was in tech. And you have to understand, software engineers are huge beneficiaries of the Cantillon effect. The way that money raising works in Silicon Valley is, you know, that's money that is very cheap. And it's mountains of cheap money pouring into startups in order to attempt to find one winner. And, you know, it's a lot like shitcoins, right? Shitcoins are basically They're like, it's like retail seed investing, right? All of a sudden, people that can't even execute very straightforward financial strategies are now seed investors, right? And so no wonder you have these founders tripping over each other to take advantage of people. Because, believe it or not, you're not prepared to be a seed investor. You will lose your ass at that. And, I did a little of that as well, actual seed investing. And it's very hard. It's very tricky. And so not only can people are bad at picking technology companies that are like to succeed, but they're bad at keeping the technology companies that do succeed. See, in seed investing, you might make 100 investments and have two that win. And the idea is to let it ride. You let them ride so that it carries the whole portfolio. And people don't know how to think like that. And so, Bitcoin for me was a big savior. But honestly, the biggest thing for me was 2020. 2020 was an absolute clown show. And it forced me to contend with my entire life up until that point and my entire belief system and realize that most of it was a lie. Most of it did not have the substance I had told myself it did. And so in the strangest way, 2020 forced me to honesty. It forced me to reconcile all the falsehoods I had believed, and it forced me into a Bitcoin maximalist position.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
But where did it click? What was that point where everything just came together into Bitcoin? That you just realized that it was it is?
Yeah, okay, so let's see. So I had at that point, I had composed a portfolio of largely Bitcoin, but also various shitcoins for the same rationale of I had done seed investing before, and I saw this was a new medium. I didn't believe that any of them were new Bitcoins. I merely saw, okay, this might be the new substrate in which seed investing happens. And it's seed investing light, right? Because and with that comes a lot less due diligence, right? But it's also easier to get in. And so I built a portfolio based on that from 2018 to 2020. And it turns out the due diligence matters. And it turns out that all of the norms that had slowly been built up in the seed investing community, the tech startup community, those norms were incredibly important to ensure that to ensure the integrity of those startups, right? And so in the seed, it turns out the seed investing world doesn't translate to altcoins because all of the integrity norms were washed away. And so it's rife with people just exiting first, essentially. So they realize, you know what? We can get this liquidity. We have very little oversight. And so we don't actually have to carry through with any of the plans. We can exit first. And so I was victim to that. But what did we see in 2020, right? What did we see? In the United States, at least, we saw a lot of things. We saw a huge protests and riots. And we saw people marching through the streets saying death to America. And we saw the lead up to a fraudulent election where the U.S. had what looks to be the last fair and real election. We saw a lot of kind of neo-racism. So a new type of popular racism towards, at first it seemed like just white people, but as it went forward, it kind of became apparent that it was kind of a Marxist machination where it's really, okay, let's degrade the semantics of language such that terms like white supremacy can apply to just all opposition. So everyone, all conservatives. And here I was in a tech company, had spent my whole adult life believing I was progressive. And I started not agreeing with the left, right? I started saying, whoa, oh, no, no, no. Oh, not that, And what I realized was that, in good times, the left is quite fine, right? City's nice. It's culturally diverse. You get lots of different people, great food. A lot of innovation, intellectual and technology seems to happen, come out of the left. But in bad times, I realized the left can absolutely lose its mind and fall for these really dangerous ideologies like Marxism. And, you know, when it clicked for me, it was when I noticed a pattern of two forces coming together. There was this sort of fixation on race. Everything became about race in the United States. This fixation on watered down, you know, diluted terms like fascism and white supremacy, which almost meant nothing anymore. It's just something you flung at your political opponent. And then also this socialist victim mentality, right? Where the United States had replaced the work hard and save economy with the stay home, you know, craft your own victim narrative and speculate economy. Does that make sense?
Everybody got onto Robin Hood and they started buying stocks and stuff.
So yeah, so where's the real economy right now? We have people sitting at home
doing casino,
right? You have these flame wars on social media where people are debating, you know, it's almost like the French Revolution. They're debating these Marxist points about, you know, who is the proletariat, you know, who is the oppressed and who is the oppressors. And so people are jockeying, you know, where they are. It's like, okay, you know, now if you're a new white, you know, male software engineer, you're very likely to, you know, place yourself. There's a strong incentive to design yourself as an oppressed person. Let's just put it that way, right? So you're very likely to become someone who is, you know, you name it. Whether you're a trans person, or let's just say you're extra forceful with your anti-racism, you know, your neo-racism. And so this is the world that we were in, and from my point of view, I was literally in it, right? I was in Silicon Valley. I was surrounded with people who were going to, in their mind, start a revolution, a socialist revolution. And it rocked me. And not only that, the funny thing is as I talked about Bitcoin and stuff with my peers, you know, I'm absolutely convinced that the tech industry insiders, software engineers, are going to be almost the last people to Bitcoin. And this blew my mind, because you would think, oh, software engineers, they're well off. They have plenty of money. They're going to kill it. But I don't think that's the case. And I think part of it is the Marxist ideology that they are drunk on. You know, they're absolutely convinced that inflation is the only tax that the ultra rich can't escape, right? That's the view. It's okay, the ultra rich, they do everything they can to oppress workers, including not pay tax. And this is the only tax that they can't escape. And the other thing is the quack job about the environment, right? This fixation that energy spend is somehow related to pollution. And, you know, they take that line and they won't listen to anything else. And so those two things make it morally impossible for a software engineer to champion Bitcoin. And the environment in these tech companies is so, I want to use the word oppressive. it's oppressive in the progressive sense, in that there is no room for conservatives. If you remember, out of Google, there was the one conservative engineer who came out and said, you know, I think that men and women actually are different. And he got made a huge example of. And Bitcoin is like that in their mind, right? It's you're basically just putting a big target on your chest saying, I'm a fascist. So this was my world, Carl. That's, I was waist deep in this world in 2020.
Nuts.
And so the thing I would say to the Bitcoin community is the people that deserve an honest life the least and deserve Bitcoin the least will definitely be the last to stack sats, because their disbelief and arrogance will prevent them from doing so. And also just the virtue signaling peer pressure, right? Like, you just don't want to be the one in your group saying, you know, oh, well, I'm killing the environment. And by the way, like, you know, I'm in with the fascist. You know what I mean? And that's the reality. That's the reality.
The fool's reality, basically. It's like they're trying so hard to control the world because they don't even realize the point that it is money that pushed them to that point where they are right now.
Yes.
And because they have no way out of that reality that they are in, that they see no option to progress, they feel very, very extreme. Like, how would I explain this? Like, this feeling that they have to cooperate with others who have similar views, fascistic leftist views, that they must enforce their own views of leftism upon those who they don't even agree with.
Yeah,
and then if that doesn't work, sorry to cut you there again, but like, when they don't agree with, then they need, when they cannot agree at all anymore, the only tool that left for them is to cut them out from society, to cancel them, to excommunicate them from the place where they are in.
Yeah, I think in their mind, in the left's mind, it's the only way for mankind to progress is to suffocate the fascist ideas. That, and when I say fascist, I'm just using the slang term, because it's kind of devolved. I think what they view it as oppressive, right? So all the, you know, the conservatives oppress, you know, they don't allow people to just be who they want to be. And they're so selfish, they're going to ruin the environment because they won't care about society. That's the view on the left. And their mind is like, listen, there's no use trying to convince them. We own society and we are going to charge forward. And, you know, good luck on the street because we're going to cut you out. We're going to cut you out of modern intellectual society. And that's the view. And so there was no room for opposing thoughts. And, you know, it goes all the way to the top. You have, you know, I started to see the places that I was at, you know, the big tech company that I was at, essentially championing the progressive stance and saying, hey, we're going to do corporate activism. And so imagine being someone who started disagreeing with the progressive worldview, and you see it from bottom to top. This, you know, you're in the most concentrated point of activism at that point. And that's what I realized, where I found myself. It's like, listen, you know, I don't think I fit in anymore, you know? I don't think these aren't my people.
Oh, God.
And so, but the crescendo, you know, when I realized that I had to change everything about my life was when I saw how close we were getting and still are getting towards genocide as a people. And I learned about genocide and learned that, you know, victimhood mentality by itself, you know, if one person thinks they're a victim and they wallow in self-pity and they try and create this narrative because that opens some doors or makes it harder for people to hold them back because they can always, you know, whip out this victim card and persecute the other person with it. Okay, if one person does it, okay. If a handful of people do it, okay. But if you can get society to firmly believe they are being oppressed, then they will break all norms in order to defeat their oppressors and eliminate them. And so, you know, I started looking to history, and I realized, you know, in the communist revolution in the Soviet Union, the statesmen had convinced...
You need to fix your microphone. So let's just go back to where you were, because you were cut out. They're going to leave this part in.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and so I started realizing that the victimhood mentality is absolutely scary and dangerous. And this is what finally put me off and made me realize I need to change everything. When a handful of people act as a victim, okay, right? They craft this narrative that they are, you know, oppressed. They wallow in pity. They find this place where they can squeeze pity out of other people, but also they can use it as a sword, right? So, you know, you cannot for sake of competence, tell someone, oh, you know what, you're just not good enough. Goodbye. You're fired or whatever it is. And so they use the victimhood narrative to say, oh, you know, don't you dare. Don't you dare set me back. I'm a victim. And that became very popular. And so when a handful of people do it, it's distasteful. But if you can get all of society to do it, you can actually convince society to cheer on a genocide. And that is absolutely terrifying. Because if a society believes that they are oppressed deep enough, they will do anything. They'll break all norms, and they'll even allow, you know, re-education camps, cheering, anything to cut out their oppressors out of society, just to do away with them. And so I started looking at history for examples of this because it scared me. I saw what I saw with Antifa, what I saw with sort of people, you know, all the discussion in my industry with my peers about a Marxist revolution. You know, we're going to break the fascists and we're going to send them to re-education camps. People, you know, bragging, very self-congratulatory about it's happening. And that scared the hell out of me. And so I looked into history and saw that, you know, in the Soviet Union, when they had a Marxist revolution, it was a very similar dynamic. The statesmen had convinced the citizenry that they were oppressed financially. There was this class war, and basically you're being screwed by everyone in the productive class. They are stealing your time, they're stealing your effort, and you're a slave and you're oppressed. And they convinced them that, you know, enough of us are ready. We're going to break the chains. We're going to not be oppressed anymore. And so they took everyone in productive society and they sent them away, sent them to Siberia, sent them to, you know, whatever you want to call it, concentration camps. They killed them. And so it was a massive genocide and people cheered it. They were absolutely thrilled. The regular people felt like finally we were free. And so there's an example of just seemingly normal people like your family or my family being captivated and excited with committing one of the most dangerous and scary types of evils that humans can commit. If you go to Germany, right, after World War One, you know, the government and the central banks had hyperinflated the Germans' money. So they had no future. They were a completely beaten people. And so their spirits were low. And just imagine that, right? You and your family, you don't have a livelihood. The future looks very bleak. And so you're a victim, right? And in their case, they actually were, you know, that you actually were a victim of hyperinflation. But the reason that that's dangerous, the reason that not taking responsibility for your own situation is that it leads to genocide. And so, you know, everyone was desolate and a great orator came along and crafted a oppressor for the oppressed. And people bought into that narrative and said, yeah, we are collective victims. There is a bad guy. There is an oppressor, and we're going to break free with them, right? And people cheered on genocide. They were absolutely thrilled. And so the thing that woke me up and scared me straight was that dynamic of collective victimhood coming out of the left will take regular good people and make them completely happy, cheering, gleeful, proud of themselves to have society turn towards a set of people and murder them. And, you know, Jordan Peterson says, knowledge of pure evil will straighten you out. And that's exactly what happened to me. I had a split in my mind and realized not only was the left not my people, but I, from that point forward, would live in stark contrast to all the values of the left. And so you had no more shit coins for me, right? No more shit coins for me. And I would produce value and I would save it honestly using Bitcoin. And I would, you know, embrace individual responsibility, and I would deter and preach against collective victimhood from that point.
Wow, that's quite a lot of process, actually.
Yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, but it was an important epiphany.
Yeah.
And it led me to this thought that I've been sharing with Bitcoiners, and I think that we're onto something here, which is, if what I'm saying is true, if, you know, if Bitcoin can save people from the the thought viruses that is progressivism, then it would go to reason that there cannot be a Bitcoin left. And so what I mean by that is that today there's a group of Bitcoiners who consider themselves progressive. And I submit that that is a temporary state, that they will actually be pulled towards conservatism, towards, valuing individual rights, the rights of a family over everything else, the longer that they stack sats. And I guess if you lift up that statement, what I'm saying is I think Bitcoin will actually kill progressivism. I think there cannot be a left at all on a Bitcoin standard. And I think that post 2030, post hyper Bitcoinization, the left will cease to exist because, well, they either will be the last to Bitcoin, and so they will impoverish themselves, or the ones that, have came over, the Bitcoin left, will slowly be pulled out of that value system by honest money. Because in a world with strict honesty, the left cannot survive. It cannot maintain itself.
Yeah, it's certainly going to become obsolete system that will be unable to function within the system. Because it's just impossible to have that.
And it's wonderful. The interaction, if you find yourself with someone who is progressive and a Bitcoiner, just playing, 20 questions, you can find out how immaterial and how soon their values will disintegrate. Because even talking through it themselves, they start saying, oh, well, of course society would pay, taxes to have a very thick and comfortable social safety net. You could say, well, wouldn't the productive class move to societies that are the most efficient in terms of the services they provide, right? Wouldn't you merely choose voluntarily to be in a society that taxes the least and provides only the essential goods and services, as far as the government is concerned, for productive individuals? And you could argue what that is. Maybe it's merely defensive mechanisms to ensure private property. Maybe that's it. But won't it tend in that direction? It won't tend in the direction of, people are by default victims, and let's make sure we all give our own time and effort so that they can stay that way, right? It won't tend in that direction.
Quite a tough topic. But I think we should steer this a tiny bit.
Yeah.
I was really curious, because I need to also limit down the time of this show. But I think we're going to go beyond it just a bit, because this is a really interesting topic with you. You created a group called Freedom Maximalists that I'm a part of. And I'm really curious about your thoughts about it and why you started it, how it went. Maybe not how it started, but more like what it is. Maybe the dear listeners want to hear about it also.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2020, there was a great purge on social media when the left decided, you know what? There will be no safe harbor for conservatives. So if you value individual responsibility and freedom and family and religious freedom and free speech, there's going to be no place for you in society. And so all of big tech, my company included, started canceling the right, canceling everywhere. And you also had the three-letter agencies going on witch hunts to find people who are conservative. And that's kind of where we are. And so I zoomed out, and not only did I leave the left and say, you know what, everything will tend to the right, I recognized that what was going to be important for Bitcoiners going forward was to, I've been saying leave the commie stack. So, the tech stack that everyone uses is being arrested by progressive ideology. And, it's a massive liability as a Bitcoiner to have a large footprint where you are projecting your identity into. So, Cara, if you went to Google and you just typed your name, your real name, what would you find? And that surface area, you have to realize, is in the laps of people who will target Bitcoiners soon. And so, you know, I thought, okay, you know, Bitcoin is censorship resistant money, and that's of great utility and an absolute cornerstone to freedom. But what's next? What is next? And the great purge from social media made me realize sovereign speech needs to exist for flourishing of individuals. And so I just took a peek at what existed, what was the state of the art, and saw that matrix.org, the matrix.org protocol, allowed for federated, decentralized, censorship-resistant applications. And one of those applications is Element. It's a chat room. And so you can basically have something that feels like a Telegram, except you can host it in such a way that it cannot be shut down. And it's end-to-end encrypted so that the individuals in the room do not have to fear of middlemen eavesdropping, vacuuming up every word they say, and storing it into a forever computer to be used later against them. And so that's what Freedom Maximalist is. It's, hey, the Bitcoiners that understand the importance of sovereign money will soon understand the importance of sovereign speech. And so who's with me? Who wants to come start a small community that is in honor to that idea that, hey, we should be able to congregate, and regardless of lockdowns or you know, tirades from the left, we should be able to congregate, and we will, and we will use technology to ensure that we can build our culture and that we can embrace our own value system. And yeah, but I can't take credit for the term Freedom Maximalist. Actually Robert Breedlove, he tweeted that first. He said the best way to describe his position was not Bitcoin maximalist, because that wasn't enough anymore, because you had this split between the left and the right. And so he said he was a freedom maximalist because he has this unrelenting loyalty towards freedom, and it goes beyond the money. And so that captivated me. I thought, you know what, there's something to that. And so we started a matrix group. There's about 100 plus people in it who love freedom. They love Bitcoin, and they don't want to stick around on the commie stack, being censored, being monitored. And yeah, so it's about taking your freedom back. And that's what we did.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Well, it's early days, isn't it?
Well, people are still using Twitter. So I wouldn't call it a complete success to leave the commie stack. But
no,
having more options around is always better than just having a single one.
Yeah, agreed. I think there's something to having a little community that you know you can talk privately with that's important, especially as you see loads of people being canceled here and there. You know you have a fallback, but also you start to build a relationship with the pseudonyms in the room, and you start to understand, hey, these are my people. This is quite nice. But it's more than that, right? It's about removing your identity from the readily available centralized web, becoming a pseudonym truly in preparation for an economy where you can work as a pseudonym. And it's about shoring up your sovereignty in all ways of your life. So money, okay, we have that figured out. People have a good sense of, I need to allocate a certain amount of my portfolio to Bitcoin. I need to learn about KYC and non-KYC. I need to prepare for a world where the economy will run on this, truly. And okay, but are you, you know, and so if you think of like a balance sheet, that's in the assets column, but what's in the liabilities column? And you can just go through your life and see, okay, all my communications are on centralized web and they're monitored and tied to my identity. That's not good, right? You can see, you know, not only is it social media, but it's like people use Gmail overwhelmingly. They have their calendar in iCloud. All their pictures are being uploaded to the cloud and of either Apple or Google. And you have to realize these are not built in sovereignty preserving ways, right? And so I figure today we have people buying Bitcoin. And now you're starting to get people running their own node at home, right? So they're taking sovereignty. Where does that trend go? I think it goes towards using strong encryption, using decentralized platforms to take back, you know, all aspects of their digital life. And once you've done that, you're in the ideal place to become a sovereign citizen, and not before. It's not just like, Caro, okay, 2030 comes, okay, we're billionaires now, and great, we're sovereign citizen. It's like, no, you actually have to engineer away the liabilities in your digital life before you can actually be free. And that's kind of what, that's the thread we're pulling on. It's like, hey, what if we do that together? What if we do that together? But it's a fun bunch. You can, you also imagine there are people in there doing kind of prepping. They're thinking about food sovereignty, energy sovereignty. And so, you know, a lot of people, their minds are gravitating towards citadels, right? Hey, you know, what if I had less reliance on society? And so what if I bought some land? And what if I thought about renewable energy? What if I thought about animals and such? And so this is...
If you could do everything yourself.
Yeah, or at least embrace in localism. Yeah. And say, hey, you know, let's say Freedom Maximalist gets to thousands of people, and there's going to be local affinity. Like, I know a hot spot for conservatives right now, they look towards Florida. They look towards Texas, Puerto Rico, because people are a little more conservative there. And those states, there's good promise of those states protecting rights there. And so you go, oh, wow, that's a great place for sovereignty, self-sufficiency, surrounding yourself with people that want to push off, push away, push back against the collectivism. And so, you know, a good proxy for freedom in the future might be which areas push back against COVID tyranny, right? Which areas had very strong lockdowns, have mass mandates, you know, are trying to make examples of people that don't want to be go along with that. And so those might not be the best places to be. On the other hand, you have Florida, where the governor has made a huge point to say, listen, not here. You know, leave my people alone. My people are free. So so it's no wonder. It's no wonder Bitcoiners are saying, hey, I have sovereign money. Where can I go where I'm free? And that's what Freedom Maximalist is about. It's about realizing freedom and sovereignty together, but also finding your people. You know, when you have the same break from the left that I've had, you realize that you want to surround yourself with people that are at the same level of realization as you. And so, you know, we welcome everyone there, and we think that even the Bitcoin left will join us there when they're ready, right? Because we just don't think that that can last in the world that we're in. So, you know, matrix.org, if you search Freedom Maximalist, you'll find us, or Bitcoin. I think we're on the first page.
Cool. So what's your view on God? How does Bitcoin tie to it?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, I've heard it said that, you know, the afterlife, it's hard to raise your time horizon further than that, right? And if you're coming from the far left or a consumption-based life, and you move towards raising your time horizon, and you move towards, okay, you know, actually the approach to life is something like produce value for the world so that you can afford the responsibility of a meaningful life. And so already it's, okay, now we're cooking, because your eyes are lifted way up and you're looking down the line. And that takes you to a place of, well, how do you get more meaning in your life? And quickly you end up at family, loyalty, kids, legacy. And so your eyes are looking even further down. And you can't look any further than God and religion. And I think everyone has their own story, and freedom of religion is a beautiful thing, and or even freedom from it, I think, is necessary. But for me, you know, I was smug, and I had, as a kid, absolutely convinced myself that, you know, religion was just something that a device we had invented ourselves in order to evolve ourselves, right? And that what we had done was we had created religion in order to imprint a collective morality on our person. And once that morality took hold, we could discard the religion. And I firmly believe that that was the case. But it wasn't until I saw 2020 and saw the horror of genocide that I realized that I was completely naive. And I could not reconcile the difference between tragedy and evil at that point. Because tragedy, okay, it's tragic if you get cancer. It's tragic if there's an earthquake that wipes out your town and everyone dies. It's tragic if you're sent to war. But that's different than evil. You know, the evil is pernicious. There's a voluntariness to it, right? Like evil is like, okay, I don't take personal responsibility for my life, so I'm going to weave a victim story. And that's a small evil. But that leads to a big evil where if everyone's doing it, we find ourselves cheering genocide. That's a large evil. And I realized everything about my worldview could not stand in the face of that. I could not reconcile it. And so I had already been turned conservative in many ways of my life. And that, you know, holding those two things in my hand, I realized the only way to endure the suffering of that type of evil was to embrace God. And for me, the path was Christianity. And I realized that all the things I had rejected as a kid, being a smug individualist, I was just wrong. I was just wrong about. And, you know, life is about suffering and you have to be able to endure that. But the greatest types of evil and suffering cannot be endured on the ideology of the left. And that sends you to the right. That forces you to look further out. And the furthest out that you can see is God. And that was, you know, my story with it. Also, shout out to Saint Bitcoin, who helped me find the way. That is a, he's a great guy. And I think that you're going to get a lot of theist Bitcoiners, because the fact is right now on the right, and in, you know, in like the south of the United States, there's a lot of people that, well, they're suspicious of Bitcoin, right? Because they have a deep, you know, a discriminatory position against all big powers. They think the government is trying to fool them at all times. And so Bitcoin is shaped like that in their mind. They see that and they go, oh, that's just a trap, right? And no wonder, no wonder. But I think what when they realize the connection between money printing and how they and their families have been impoverished, when they make that connection, I think they might see Bitcoin in a different light, that in fact, they could return to an honest life and people can't steal their time. So I think we're just starting to see the beginning of theists and religious people coming to Bitcoin. I think it will turn up significantly from here.
Mm-hmm. Like the guy who actually was on our show a couple hours ago. And your guy, we were talking about the unmentionable guy who was leading the protest at the Capitol. And he turned into a Bitcoiner, actually, mm-hmm. a while ago. And it's a very interesting turn event that he found that through Bitcoin, he can achieve what he was trying to achieve previously, but in a much more interesting manner. Because Bitcoin gives you power.
Right.
I've been having debates about this, but I think it's very bogus, because lots of people who only look at the economical side, they claim that Bitcoin itself doesn't give you anything at all. But this is wrong. Bitcoin is like a living system that seeks interaction with human beings. It rewards you for using it, like mining. It rewards miners to mine blocks. It rewards the users for using it by appreciating in value. And the more you use it and the more money you put into it, and the more you hold long term, the more it rewards you with freedom and power. It's like it gives you the sovereignty back that you were missing in your life. And through this paradoxical way, it somehow, even though it is an inanimate system that doesn't really do anything in the real world, it still achieves this. Because somehow the social organization around it is so large that it can project out these effects onto individuals.
You know, Andrew Yang, he has this book, and you know, Yang Gang, he's very popular. He's kind of like the new class of the Bernie Sanders and people were really captured by him because he's this technology entrepreneur and he's a big proponent of UBI. And in a funny way, UBI is kind of the same side of it's the opposite side of the same coin, because in the left's mind, this whole idea of give people money is like, hey, you know, stop keeping us down and give us time to breathe so we can build the life that we want. But it doesn't accomplish that, because if you look at, you know, very clearly with socialism, if you look at examples of the greatest amount of oppression and inequality, it's in socialist countries. But what's funny is those people, I believe what they're asking for is their time back. Stop taking their time. And I think that they will have the light bulb moment, because, you know, where Andrew Yang says give people money, Bitcoin says give people time. And it gives you your time back in a way where you can slow down and say, what is my life going to be about?
UBI is only good for one thing: to hyperinflate the system much more faster.
Yeah, because it's rewarding victimhood, and it's rewarding inaction, right? You know, all handouts, right?
It's all handouts, right? Yes. And when you receive that money, you will be much more inclined to spend it much more faster.
Yeah, because...
And when it's arriving on time for into your bank account, you're going to reach much more faster for credit. Because you know that it's going to be arriving tomorrow, you can pay back your credit. But one day when it's not arriving anymore because the system completely collapsed and the rate of a credit that you picked up is much more higher now, you're fucked.
Well, and you're being awarded other people's time and effort.
Yeah.
Right? And so you don't have the skin in the game. So when you get that money, it's like, I better go spend this while it's still here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm cheating the system. I better use it. And it's funny because Bitcoin achieves the same thing, I think, that people on the left want. It's just through honesty, right? You're not mired in dishonesty and stealing and time theft. And instead it's hey, orient yourself towards society, observe the problems, learn to solve them, and save, right? You can build a very meaningful life full of content and time at a pace that won't burn you out, that will allow you to become strong, become tough, thick-skinned, so that you can shoulder the weight of responsibility, and then you could achieve the real meaning of life, which is to task yourself with being the caretaker of responsibility, so that you can manage things that someone who has themselves put together can. Because, you know, you come into the world with nothing and you leave with nothing, and you're not going to look back and measure your experience by, you know, how much novelty and pleasure and just satisfaction you fit into your life. You're going to look back onto it and measure it in terms of meaning. And I think that the fiat world has made it, you know, you're building a house on sand in terms of morals, and you cannot build a life of meaning, because by the time you have the means to do so, you have already sacrificed your ethics to get there.
Basically, they just have to take back control over their lives, because they're completely just not in control of it, even if they think they are.
Yeah, 100%.
They're just living in this bubble.
Yeah, bubble is right.
When you just pop it, just because you're curious what's really out there that is controlling your bubble, and then it pops, and then you realize there's a bigger world out there that you can achieve with Bitcoin. I think that's just crazy. Changes everything. Changes everybody.
And it will change everybody as well. I agree there. Because up until now, Bitcoin has been able to stay apolitical and been about technology and money, but there is gravity to it. It will suck in conversations about politics and belief system.
It already did.
Because
it already did, actually. Long time ago, I think.
So I look at my situation, and so I'm newly retired. I spend my time learning about Bitcoin, learning about where I think society is, and planning for more meaning, more sovereignty, and helping others do the same. And I think, you know, we might be seeing a little bit of a Rome type thing where the United States is already unraveling. It's already in the process of losing its stance as the empire, losing the reserve currency. You're already seeing the insiders and the elites, you know, they're actively doing a fire sale of all any asset that they can get a hold of. You know, it's the final fleecing before monetary reset. You know, before, what you would see is that central banks would instigate a world war. You'd get a world war, and that would be the justification for resetting everything. And they would print before they reset so that they could excavate all the hard assets possible. So a final fleecing, and then they hit the big reset button. And now what you're seeing is, well, you know, with nuclear proliferation, you can't really start the same type of war that you could. And so you have this COVID PSYOP, which, you know, seems to have given us the same circumstances. You have kind of like a global war condition. And now they're, you know, predictably, they're cranking up the inflation. M1 is going through the roof. I think they stopped publishing those numbers now. And so they'll do what they've done in the past, and they will perform a final fleecing. All the insiders will get loads of cheap money, and they will scavenge up all the hard assets. And then they will reset the monetary system, and they'll point to the pandemic and say, it can't be helped, right? And as every individual has to choose, okay, do you want to be part of that and at the whim of those people stealing all the assets and submitted to monetary reset and all the terms, right? Or do you want to free yourself? And so I don't think, what I mean to say by this is, I think the previous cycle where people were mainly thinking about their own way to fuck off to the Bahamas and you know, chill with Raul or whatever, I think that's off the table. You know, I think we're at a place where you have to say, am I going to fight for my sovereignty, right? Am I going to avoid being submitted to monetary reset and whatever ideas the new order has in terms of what the new structure will look like? Or am I going to go with it and play the Cantillon game and stay in the fiat hamster wheel? And for those reasons, I don't think, I think the politics are here. Right. And the heavy stuff is here. It's no longer about just, you know, Bitcoin gave you your time back. You have to choose what future you want. And I think that that's where we're at. And so the people that get that, the 100 odd Bitcoiners are in Freedom Maximalist. And this is what we talk about, right? Because we're talking about, you know, okay, we want to shore up our sovereignty before a lot of this stuff happens.
So what are these future plans for yourself and Freedom Maximalists?
Well, I mean, it's fairly simple, right? I mean, number one, you want to get off the centralized web. And, you know, we have tongue in cheek, we say the commie tech stack because it's cute. It makes it kind of light and funny. But the reality is like, you know, you don't want, you know, John Smith, your name plugged into every social network and plugged into every centralized cloud provider where you're projecting your entire limbic system, you know, all your experiences and thoughts and everything to do with you into these centralized systems at the exact time when global elites want to create a type of new communism where AI is crunching all this big data and deciding, you know, centrally planning the economy, because that's what they kind of have in mind. If you look at the World Economic Forum and you look at the Great Reset, what they really want to do is say, okay, we think communism is possible this time because now we have AI and machine learning and big data. And so, you know, we'll just hook everyone up to the machine and the AI will lord over them. And so I would say, hey, distance yourself from that is number one, because it's not boots on the ground. The way that they're doing this is in the digital space. So if the coercion is in the digital space, all you have to do is remove yourself from the central web and embrace the decentralized web and strong encryption and decentralized technologies and pseudonymity, right? Get rid of John Smith. That puts you in a great position to avoid all the terms and service of the monetary reset coming up. Okay, so that's number one. Number two is, you know, maybe get out of some of the areas that are very coercive and very strong about COVID, right? So if you're in a place where they're checking your papers to get, you know, to buy groceries and you can't work in these type of areas, go to a place that is showing that it will resist that tyranny. I called out Florida and Texas. Those are great areas, but there's others. Okay. Number three, as we've talked about, you know, self-sufficiency and localism. You know, if someone tried to make an example out of you, Caro, and said, oh, you know what, Caro posted about this and politically that's not popular, so we're going to shut your water off. Well, how boned would you be? And so think about those things. Can you be in a position where, you know, you don't necessarily need to go to the grocery store to get food? You're not pulling your power from the grid. These type of things are worth thinking about if you care about sovereignty through monetary reset, right? And then finally, it's just find your people. Find your people. If, you know, if you don't intend to be submitted to this new system without a lot of say, don't hang around people who benefit from that new system. And that applied to me, right? I'm in tech and I'm talking about these things and people are like, what are you talking about? You know, we're the, we're the bourgeois, like, this is fantastic. We're the insiders. If you don't agree with that stuff, then you need to find your people who actually care about freedom, who actually care about being able to hand sovereignty down to their children. Because what world do you want them to live in? You know I want my children to grow up with the ability to make their own mistakes, to have choice, to have risk, and to produce value and earn hard money. And I know that Bitcoin's not enough. Politically, the world goes through these phases and you just need to be smart about it. So if you're in a city, if your identity is projected into the central web, if you're in the fiat hamster wheel in terms of your job, these are all forces that are going to pull you into monetary reset under the terms of the elite that are designing what the new system is. And I can tell you from looking at it, they're calling it stakeholder capitalism. It's not capitalism. It's just AI communism. And, you know, look to the past. It's not good. It's not good. So that's what's in the future for me. I want my time. I want to enjoy the simple things. I want to start a family. And I want to help protect sovereignty for future generations.
That's nice. All right. I think we kind of reached the end of this podcast. You're a bit over time also. What?
And, I really appreciate being on, Caro.
I really, really appreciate you coming on the show. I really enjoy talking to you, man. There might be parts I need to edit out due to Apple gonna just kick me off their platform. But
you know, hey, it's
always worth the risk.
Controversial, but I think that that's honestly where we are. Where
yeah,
it's about more than money right now. It really is, and well, it's about time. You know, these type of things can't be avoided long, and so be it. So be it.
Yeah. One day we're just going to have to go in ourselves and then fix the system or these companies.
My hope is that what we, you know, the hope is that we can just put ourselves in a position that we can peaceably resist tyranny long enough that Bitcoin does the heavy lifting. Right? Because if Bitcoin has the power to change people's minds and move it away from the collective and towards the individual, then it will do the hardest parts of earning mindshare across society. So all we need to do is hunker down, you know, understand our value system, find our people, and then let Bitcoin deliver that value system across the world. Right? And so yeah. I think it's a beautiful thing. It's a battle for freedom, but it's a peaceable battle. And I think Bitcoin is, a lot of people think it's a shield. I think it's a sword. I think it will go out, slay dishonest mindsets.
Mm-hmm. I think we have to end there. Yeah.
Thank you, bud. Thank you, Carl. And I want to thank Saint Bitcoin for helping show me the way and introducing me.
Keep preaching, Saint.
Keep preaching, Saint.
So far, I've been really good. Right. Well, yeah. Thanks a lot for coming again. I really appreciate it. And I hope the listeners also enjoyed it.
Thank you, Carl. You can find me on Twitter at LaserHodl. You can find me on Bitcoin Hackers at LaserHodl. And let's see. If you're interested in Freedom Maximalist, matrix.org, search Freedom Maximalist. You could also get us on element.io.
Cool, cool. So that was the episode for today. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Next time, no idea who the hell gonna be the guest, so I'm kinda short on the list. So if anybody have any ideas who should I interview, give me a holler on Twitter. So yeah, see you guys around until next time. Bye-bye.